Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks for hanging in there with us this morning as we got some technical situation figured out here at KUNM. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. The topic of today's show is student loan debt. It's something that is on a lot of people's minds these days as college students graduate across the country. Many students are facing heavy burdens of student loan debt. Just last week, a piece of legislation that would have extended lower student loan interests for new borrowers was stalled in the Senate. We heard earlier this hour, or last hour actually, from New Mexico Senator Tom Udall on his perspective on student loans. And we're taking your calls this morning on student loan debt. Do you owe on a student loan? How much do you owe? How long is it going to take you to pay off your student loan? And do you think it was a good choice for you to borrow money to attend college? The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. The toll-free number is 877-899-5866. You can send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments on our website, kunm.org. Joining us this morning to discuss, we have Jose Enriquez. He is the campus organizer, or a campus organizer, with the New Mexico Public Interest Research Group student chapter here at UNM in Albuquerque. Also joined this morning by Brian Malone. He is director of student financial aid at the University of New Mexico. Thanks to you both for joining us this morning.
All right, good morning. Thank you.
So, Brian, I wanted to start with you. Some of the numbers that we've heard, the national numbers about student loan debt, over $1 trillion in student loan debt. It's surpassed credit card debt at this point. Some people say that's a good thing. People are buying education instead of, you know, maybe consumer items that are less integral to success in life, some would argue. Other people say, wow, you know, education has become incredibly expensive, and it's become more difficult for students to achieve success and attend college and then pay for it afterwards. Can you contextualize New Mexico students within those numbers? $25,000 was the average that has been quoted in a lot of coverage. $25,000 per undergraduate student after they graduate.
Sure. In New Mexico, at the University of New Mexico, and this would be data from the graduating class of 2009-2010, which is the most complete data that's out there, about 45% of all graduates borrowed. And out of those that did borrow, it was about $18,600 was the average indebtedness on there. So I think two important parts on there, like I said, is the amount of money, of course, is important, but how many students borrowed as well. Throughout the state, you also have New Mexico State and New Mexico Tech, similar lower indebtedness. New Mexico State around 16,000 and New Mexico Tech around 14,000, with different borrowing rates as well.
Jose, as an organizer with the Public Interest Research Group here in New Mexico, what have you been hearing from students at the University of New Mexico about their student loan debts?
Well, right now, a lot of students are very frustrated at the fact that interest rates are doubling. And a lot of the reason is because they don't understand why. They don't understand about the law that was passed back in 2007 that capped interest rates at 3.2%.
Or it's 3.4, right?
3.4, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't understand that this law is sunsetting this July 1st. So people think that, you know, they're kind of, that the government's kind of like out to get them and that nobody's there to support them and that they purposely sunset the law at this time.
So this is, you're talking about the legislation that is stalled in the Senate right now that would extend this lower interest rate of 3.4% on Stafford loans to new borrowers starting July 1st. So to clarify, it's people who have existing loans wouldn't be affected by this interest rate change that is scheduled to happen in July.
Right.
Right. It would be new borrowers, but still anybody planning to go to school in the fall who's looking at taking out another loan would be facing the increased interest rate. What kinds of things are you hearing from students? They're frustrated. What do they want to see happen?
Well, you know, obviously they just want to keep see their representatives support them and keep these interest rates low at 3.4%. Over the course of 2 days, we've held a photo petition event on March 30th at the National Hispanic Cultural Center during Cesar Chavez Day, and on April 10th when we participated in National Day of Action. We collected 115 photo petitions from students, some professors, and concerned citizens, and on March 30th, we actually ran into Martin Heinrich at this event, and he said that he was either already co-sponsoring the build or is in the process of co-sponsoring at the time. And I'm glad to see that both him and Ben Ray Lujan are supporting New Mexico students by co-sponsoring House Resolution 3826.
So we've got a call on the line. Let's go to Gary in Albuquerque. Good morning, Gary. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Gary.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, I teach for at the post-secondary level, and I also took out student loans as an undergraduate and a graduate student. And you know, I'm glad that you're talking about this. One of the things that breaks my heart is that so many students don't realize that while they'll let you roll your unpaid amount of interest into the next year if you can't pay it because you're not making that much money, they capitalize on it. And I really think that I'm glad that they have student loans, but I think that the interest rates and the capitalization on the principal is really just really creating, a system of being indebted.
How long is it going to take you to pay off your student loans?
I probably will never pay mine off. I mean, I was a ward of the court. I didn't have family to help me pay for school, so I would not have been able to go to school without loans. And so I do think that loans are appropriate and helpful, and that people, you know, there should be some kind of recourse if you want to get a lot of education, which I did. I have 3 degrees, that I should take some responsibility for that amount of money that I need to go to school. But I do think it should be affordable. I worked with NGOs. I taught in the public school system. My loan, when I went through a bad period during a divorce and raising a cousin who didn't have a family, I went into default, and I had $30,000 worth of loans at that time, and I went into $45,000 worth of fees and penalties on top of that within a 3-year window. So, you know, that to me, it seems like those are the kinds of things that sometimes things happen, people get sick. That to me is what seems so extreme on top of the fact that education is becoming so expensive. I don't think that that's appropriate either. People will never be able to get out of that debt.
Thanks for your call, Gary. Brian, your response.
The caller is correct on that. On the loan she's referring to is unsubsidized loans. If you do have the ability to pay off the interest as it accrues quarterly. If you do not, it does capitalize onto the principal. And
that's during school. Like while you're in school, exactly. The interest is building up on your loan.
Exactly. And that's one type of loan that's offered. And people can owe more money when they leave than when they first borrowed.
And then there are the subsidized loans where the interest is being paid while the student is in school and for a brief deferment period at the end of school.
There's a 6-month grace period. Actually, the 6-month grace period has been suspended for a 2-year period, but there has been a grace period, a 6-month grace period where it was deferred also in the past.
So what do you do in your department at UNM, the Student Financial Aid Department, to educate students as they're borrowing money about what the impact of their borrowing behavior is going to be on them over time?
In general, so all schools and are required for all borrowers to have go over their rights and responsibilities with having loans. It's called entrance counseling, loan entrance counseling. So all students are required to go through that. That goes over the different requirements of the loans and on payments and things along those lines. I think always, though, more can be done as far as financial literacy and educating people further on it. But basically, at this point, just communicating what people's rights and responsibilities are with loans.
Jose, you know, sometimes I think about loan negotiations as when you're presented with information, you get like 50 pages and you're like, here, and blah, 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 and people kind of go over things really quickly with you. What is your perspective on the educational aspect for students? Do students get enough information about loans when they borrow?
Unfortunately, no. About 2/3 of students can't tell the difference between private and government-subsidized loans. So, you know, education is very important, especially because when I was going to high school and I graduated back in high school back in 2006, I was told by my guidance counselors and my teachers that, hey, you know, it's okay to take on student debt because it's good debt. You know, college graduate is expected to make $650,000 more than a high school graduate.
And that's over a lifetime, right?
Yeah, a lifetime. And, you know, we were told to take on this debt, but at the same time, we weren't really educated, you know, on, okay, well, you know, what's the difference between going to the bank and taking out a private loan with your parents or, you know, filling out a FAFSA and the federal subsidized loans.
Great. Let's take a few more calls. We're talking about student loan debt today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Brian Malone is with us this morning. He's the director of student financial aid at the University of New Mexico here in Albuquerque. Jose Enriquez is a campus organizer with NMPIRG, the student chapter here at UNM. Let's go to Ted in Peña Blanca. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning. I have a bit of a story to tell, and I'll start with 1972 when I graduated from college, and it cost me virtually nothing to get my bachelor's degree, and I received all of the funding through grants and scholarships, and I was encouraged by some friends to borrow some money just to begin to establish credit. And so reluctantly, I borrowed a small amount of money. I really don't remember what it was, but it was in the neighborhood of $1,200. And instead of spending that money on my education, I spent it on a stereo that I still have.
And it still works, right?
It still works.
And it's probably the best educational investment you made was in your studying music, right?
Yes, it's only cost me $150 since buying it because I had to go out and buy a CD player.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then I went to graduate school, and again, it cost me nothing because, once again, I was on grants and scholarships. And when I finished my master's degree, I had saved $3,000 of what I had been given over a two-year period of time in order to complete a master's.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Going on for the PhD doesn't even count because I have no idea how much money I made during that period of time.
Right. Well, Ted,
education was absolutely free for me, and I think it's just absolutely terrible that this discussion of the commodification of education has to take place. And I hope that students find out from me and other people my age that education costs virtually nothing. And these people today are being robbed by a system that is just going to completely crater their lives financially. So I hope that people are outraged by what I say.
Thanks for your call this morning, Ted. Let's go to Scott in Santa Fe. Good morning, Scott. You're on the air.
Good morning. I think Ted is absolutely right. You know, I'm a UNM graduate. I graduated last December at the age of 43. $38,000 in debt. I had to take out loans because I could not go to school full-time and keep a roof over my head. So I took out loans and worked part-time. Since that time, I have not been able to find a full-time job in my field. The market is extremely competitive right now. I'm working like three part-time jobs, and today I'm actually moving because I can't pay my rent. And, yeah, I'm outraged, too, because I know that fees have been raised, and we have been essentially commodified, students have been commodified, and put into some kind of debt slavery for their lifetime. $1 trillion in debt, student debt, will never be paid off. My debt will never be paid off. All I can do is do a lot of paperwork to try to keep the hounds at bay. And I also want to direct people's attention to a website. It's called OccupyStudentDebtCampaign.org. That's OccupyStudentDebtCampaign.org, where they are trying to get 1 million people to take a pledge that when we reach 1 million people, 1 million people will stop paying their student debts as a means of protest. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Scott. Brian, did you have comments on either of those callers?
It's definitely true that the cost of education has gone up, that borrowing has gone up tremendously over a period of years. When you see the difference between the early 70s and now, it is a dramatic shift.
Can you explain what that is, what that process is? How has it come to be that an undergraduate can owe $40,000 for an undergraduate degree at UNM now compared to Ted, who was talking about having, you know, achieved a master's degree with a balance in the bank?
The balance in the bank's impressive with that as well. But as far as the tuition amounts, I think the early 70s, the tuitions were $400 or $500 a semester, if not less. And you're talking now at an in-state rate at UNM over $3,000, around $3,000. So that in and of it, and then just the regular, like you were saying, you don't just go to school, you don't just pay tuition. You also have room and board, and you have to live your life as well. So you're also talking about the general cost of living that you're also trying to pay, and you can't just do it necessarily on what you had in your pocket.
Jose.
Yes, the last caller brings up an excellent point. You know, we're told that getting a college degree is a good path to a better life. But in 2010, half of all college graduates couldn't find a job right after college. And, you know, that's a huge issue, especially with the student debt at $1 trillion. If these students don't have a job to pay off this debt, you know, we're going to get ourselves in a huge financial crisis, which is what Moody Analytics is warning us right now.
Well, so I wanted to ask the gentleman who called before, but I didn't get a chance to, this difference between borrowing money from the federal government or other nonprofit organizations. I know New Mexico Student Loan Corporation is a nonprofit here in New Mexico that loans to students. Not some.
They no longer do. They used to have alternative loans, but that was they discontinued the program a few years ago.
Okay, my bad. Thank you. But that there are nonprofits that do loan. Right.
Yeah, and there's also banks. They're usually generally called alternative loans. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why, Jose? Can you explain why a student might find themselves borrowing from a bank as opposed to borrowing a subsidized loan from the government? Is there any reason why the government's not going to loan money to people?
Yes, the government only gives out a maximum of $23,000 per student throughout their collegiate career. Once you exceed that limit, then you'll have to go to a private lender.
Okay.
And that it does vary. Some students can borrow up to, like the other caller indicated, you borrow more than that. It depends on what year you are in school. If you're considered independent or dependent, students can borrow up to $57,000. There's also annual limits. It also can be what Jose had mentioned earlier, where someone just doesn't know or goes that other route. Alternative lenders should be informing students to first seek money through the federal government because they are better loans.
And better loans because why?
A lot of times, like we were talking about earlier with the subsidized loan, that the interest is deferred while you're in school and stuff, like you're not making payments at that point, that things along those lines especially are better, and then the repayments.
What about situations like some of the callers have indicated where, you know, you graduate from school, you can't find a job, and so you don't have an income. Are there differences in the way that private lenders and the government lenders deal with financial hardship situations?
And they can. With the federal government, you can pursue forbearance is what the term is referred to for economic hardship. And the alternative lenders could have a different set of criteria in order to do that, to establish that.
Yes. And another thing to point out with the student loan debt is that it stays with the person throughout their whole lives. You can't default on it whatsoever.
So you can't file for bankruptcy either, right?
No, you can't. And it's also really hard to consolidate all these loan debts into one payment.
Let's take a few more calls. Sid in Albuquerque. Good morning, Sid. You're on the air.
Yes. I just have a comment and a question that kind of for the members there. Well, I went through undergrad and then law school, and I've noticed that in undergrad school, by the way, I have much more debt in undergrad than I did in law school because I went to a state school for law school and a private school for undergrad, but that's kind of another issue. But I noticed that a lot of my friends in college that were, you know, were young guys or girls, were kids, really, and were 19 and 20, and were taking out student loan money for kind of cost of living and tuition and this thing. And I was finding that my friends who were getting these $5,000 and $6,000 checks that were supposed to be for student loan money were using it on private things and personal things. And I think one of your previous callers said he bought a radio, but they would do, like, you know, they'd buy Mac and Apple computers. They would buy. I had one friend that actually did some plastic surgery. Do these counselors now kind of counsel these students who are really kind of coming out of teenage years and moving into young adults, but they still just don't understand the concept of paying the stuff back, that, yes, I'm giving you a $6,000 check here, and that's for your cost of living, and that's for your tuition. You know, don't blow it on things that are not meant for education. That's just my question. I'm wondering what they do.
Jose.
Yes, well, in the case of, you know, knowing people buying an iMac computers, that's essential nowadays in academia. Information technology plays a huge role. I remember going to the library one day looking for a journal article, and I couldn't find it, so I was able to get it through an interlibrary loan and got it digitally. And, you know, you also need it for email and, you know, reading news articles and stuff like that. So a computer is actually really essential for the college experience to actually learn. For that person who got plastic surgery, well, you know, that's, you know, a horrible decision on their part.
Well, Jose, I want to bring Brian into the conversation. This question of what students do with the money that they borrow through a student loan program, are there limitations on what students should or can use their money for? How is this kind of issue of, like, what goes towards education, what helps your educational progress or is room and board compared to what might be more of a recreational expense or non-education related expense?
Any money from the student loans is supposed to be used for educational expenses. Educational expenses, though, is not just tuition and fees, books and supplies. As Jose had mentioned, that could be a computer purchase, but it also could be not to buy a car, but also to assist you in your transportation getting back to school. Like we had said, you do have to live while you're going to school.
Or internet service, so you can have internet at home.
And
or
ultimately, though, as far as how a student would use those funds, generally what would happen at a school is that the tuition would be, like any charges that are charged to the university would be removed first, and then whatever would be left over would be refunded. At that point, the student, we wouldn't have any control over what they're doing with it. But it's intended for educational expenses. And I think the biggest thing with that, the biggest, which is really what he's hitting on, is that students need to be aware that loans are loans that need to be paid back. And it's if there's a 10-year window you're looking at, you know, or down the road to pay it back, but that people really need to borrow what they need to borrow and really look at what's essential for to live.
Let's take a call from Robert in Albuquerque. Good morning, Robert. You're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to point out the real reason for all this, which I never hear about, is, and it's coincided as taxes were brought down on corporations and the wealthy, then colleges had to make up for that loss of funds by raising fees. This has been a gradual process, probably since the 80s when all of this started, and that's the real problem here, and I never hear that talked about. They always talk about the problem, but you guys never talk about, not only you, but anybody else I've heard talk about this, talk about where this problem started and you know, the real answer to it. The real answer to it is raise taxes back up on the people who can afford to pay them to, for college education, for, all types of things like this. That's the point I wanted to make.
Jose, in regards to Robert's comment about the structure of taxation and kind of shifting burdens of cost of living and things like that onto students, is this something that you've organized around with NMPIRG?
No, not directly, but Robert did bring up a good point. Last spring, 43 colleges in 43 states raised tuitions. And that's because in those 43 states, education was cut substantially. And, you know, here on the university campus, there's protests against the regents. But, you know, to be fair to the regents, you know, they were put in a tight spot. They were getting less funding through the state. And usually what regents and trustees do in this situation is they raise tuition because they're usually left with not that many options. And you know, he's right. There's a lot of tax money that's not being paid. There's a bill in Congress right now, the Stop Tax Haven Abuse Act, which should close certain corporate tax loopholes and should raise, you know, $70 to $100 billion in tax revenue. And with that money, you could use it to like pay for stuff like higher education.
And that is one of the points that Senator Udall made. He's advocating for a closure of tax loopholes in order to pay for keeping student loan interest rates low for another year. If you'd like to hear that interview with Tom Udall, it'll be posted on our website later this morning, just a few minutes after this show is over, along with the audio for this show. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about student loan debt. Jose Enriquez is a campus organizer with the New Mexico Public Interest Research Group student chapter here at UNM. Brian Malone is the director of student financial aid at the University of New Mexico. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Saggio's, homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts, serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
Then I won't have to worry about that broken down ragged boy.
Yes, indeed. It's a great feeling to finally get another car after the old one's been breaking down over and over. It's another great feeling to get even more use out of an old car, and here's how. Donate it to KUNM. Car donors get a membership, a tax deduction, and the satisfaction of really helping out. Just call toll-free 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Support comes from Saggio's, homemade real...
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We're talking about student loan debt this morning, and Brian Malone, he's the director of the Student Financial Aid Department at the University of New Mexico, and he has a previous engagement this morning, so I'm going to get a last question into you. I wanted to ask about some other legislation that was passed in 2007, the student loan forgiveness legislation. Can you just talk a little bit about options for students who have large amounts of student loan debt and what the federal government has available with respect to loan forgiveness?
As far as options with the federal government on forgiveness, we could get into more detail. I could provide information on public service is the biggest area with that there's legislation. In general, most of the options from the federal government more have to do with options on to avoid default or to get into forbearance, like I said, for economic hardship or an income-based repayment. So or more along the lines of that. It also can be with private organizations or in the military or things along those lines where some corporations may have it that over a period of time they would pay off student debt at that point.
Is there a website that's good for people to go to get in contact with you?
To get in touch with us?
Mm-hmm.
We're at unm.edu / FinAid.
Mm-hmm. FinAid.
Yes.
Great.
And that's the website at UNM.
Mm-hmm.
In general, they can also contact us at 277-8900, which is our communication center. We're also available on campus and also through chats online.
Great. Thanks a lot for joining us this morning. Brian Malone, the Director of Student Financial Aid at the University of New Mexico. We're going to take a few calls now. Let's go to Mary in Santa Fe. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is a very informative program, so I'm glad I tuned in. I graduated from the University of Texas in 1968 and have two graduate degrees, a master's and a PhD. My PhD was in 1985, awarded then. I did have student loans for my master's and my doctorate. I was fortunate with the bachelor's that my parents paid for my college. UT then, the tuition was $100 a semester.
Wow.
Yeah. So I know times have really, really changed. I'm all for the protests that are going on and the wake-up calls. I agree with a caller who said we've got to look at the tax situation because people who go to college shouldn't come out of it with that kind of debt. They just shouldn't. And I personally think that tuition for college should be really, really low, if not free. That's a biased viewpoint from a teacher who was really, really fortunate to go to college and to be like a third-generation college graduate.
Well, so, Mary, are you still paying on your student loans?
Oh, no way, man. I mean, I finished my master's loan. I got a letter from whoever the agency was. It may have been the feds. I don't know. Just said, pay off your loan early so more students, there's more money for more students. And I thought, what a good idea. I had a full-time teaching job, and it was relatively easy. Because I think my payments for that were like $50 a month.
Right, right.
So, you know, I'm older, and I was really fortunate. For my doctorate, I can't remember how long it took me to pay it off, but okay. Not that long.
Thanks, Mary. I'm going to take a few more calls. Let's hear from Terry in Santa Fe. Good morning, Terry. You're on the air.
Hi, Elaine. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a big fan of yours.
Thanks.
I just wanted to say that I'm in my early 30s, and I was able to get a bachelor's degree and a master's degree without really any student loans, a few, but kind of not anything that was crippling in any way. I was just very fortunate. I came from a, you know, single-parent family, but my stepfather was, he came into the picture, and he paid for my bachelor's degree, and then I used an assistantship to get my master's degree. And I'm very aware of how much that's benefited me. Maybe not so much, I wasn't aware of it 15 years ago, but now I am, because I was able to take low-paying positions to boost my career initially. And I also was debt-free and, you know, was able to get a mortgage, no problem. I have very good credit. And, you know, I'm not, like, rolling in the dough. I don't have tons of money because I'm not paying student loans, but I really realized how fortunate I was and how different my life could be today if that wasn't the case. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. Let's take another call from Jess in Tijeras. Jess, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for answering my call. I wanted to talk about an alternative to college. These tuitions right now, you've already had several callers say that these tuitions are absolutely robbing young people. And I remember when I went to the University of Texas, which was a long time ago, my tuition was $50 a semester. But later on, I got into photography, and I learned advertising photography from a mentor, and had a very successful career that way. I have a grandson who was a good student in high school, and when college time came, he couldn't see going to college. He had a dream of becoming a ship captain. He was raised on the coast. And he's now working on a supply ship out of Galveston and making good money. And his dream is still alive. And I have a good friend here in Albuquerque who learned from a mentor how to run a pet store. And he has a very good business. Now, I just recently did business with a young woman, did some landscaping for me. She's 19 years old, and she has her own landscaping business. So there are a lot of things out there that can fulfill people's dreams. And a young person can go to work for a mentor and work for a very small amount of money, even minimum age, and will have no debt, but will learn a trade. We'll learn a career, and we'll even get to know some of the mentors, suppliers, and customers.
Hey, Jess, thanks for your call this morning. We also got a few emails today, two emails, one from Stixier and one from Coyote in Corrales, emails and comments online about how investing in education by the government is what is necessary. Stixier says that the country's founders believed in a well-informed country, and that if being well-informed means being well-educated, then the government should better support education. Coyote in Corrales says the issue is investing in America's future, and that the legislation we were talking about, Jose, earlier, this extension of lower student loan interest rates is something that Coyote in Corrales wants to see passed. We'll take a few more calls. Dean in Albuquerque, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I'm a local college counselor at a high school here and also on the committee that puts on the free college fair every fall here in Albuquerque for the entire state. part of that, we do a financial aid session. And the only, while a lot of this is very true, and the president at CSU recently said that two decades ago, two-thirds of their funding came from the state and one-third came from the students. Now, one-third comes from the state and two-thirds comes from the students. So that,
so a shift, know, of about a third.
Yeah, exemplifies the change in what's expected, the burden that's being placed on students. But I'm afraid that the conversation is scaring people away from college a little bit. And what I wanted to point out is the amazing program here in New Mexico. If you work hard in high school, and it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a top student, but if you work hard and you get a good, you know, reasonable GPA, and you go directly on to a public in-state institution, you will get the lottery scholarship, which will cover the majority of your tuition. That doesn't mean room and board, but your tuition. And you, if you go to your local school, especially if you live at home and you go on and you take these classes and the lottery scholarship pays your tuition, you can graduate in New Mexico with a college degree, which will open doors. I don't disagree with the previous caller who said that other avenues are possible, but a college degree opens a lot of doors, and you can do that for low or almost no loan. If you simply, you know, as a high school student, you know, do good work and then go directly on to college and work hard to get your degree.
Dean, I want to follow up with a question. When you were talking about the kind of the shifting burden of college education from two-thirds not on the student to two-thirds on the student,
right?
How do you, when you're talking to students that you're advising, how do you address this question of the total cost of education being so much more, so that that additional third for a student is also on a larger price tag?
Right. So, you know, there's a couple things that I think, you know, obviously part of the raising costs of college is that the federal government and the state governments are not as committed to education, no matter what they say. The facts vote with the dollars, and the dollars aren't there. The other issue, you know, is that there's certain things you can't change about a college education. You know, you have to have people teaching. You have to pay for their salaries there, you know, and salaries go up. And I think that there's certain costs and certain things that you can't economize about college and about education that makes it relatively expensive. So the issue that I talk about with students really is looking at a range of schools, range of possible costs, applying to those range of schools and seeing what those costs are at the end so that you can pick your level of loan. For example, we had a student's top choice this year, got in, but he was going to have to come up with $98,000 in debt. And, you know, we basically said to him, no, you're not. That's just not responsible way to be. Mm-hmm. So you have to pick one of the other options that's going to require less debt or no debt of you. And so, you know, that's the way we try and talk about things with students, is trying to keep as many doors open, because the financial aid process is not clear, and students don't always know what their expectations will be for their payments until after they get their acceptances.
Thanks for your call this morning, Dean. That was really important points that you brought up. Jose, do you have any closing thoughts this morning? Jose Enriquez is a campus organizer with the New Mexico Public Interest Research Group student chapter here at UNM.
Yes, well, you know, with rising college costs, struggling family finances, and uncertain job prospects for graduates, the last thing that should happen is interest rates doubling on student loans. And I'd kind of like to end off on an anecdote that my professor of economics told me once. He was saying when the United States government put funding for the Erie Canal, there's one huge problem. There weren't any civil engineers in the country. And while some of the founding fathers did believe that there should be a very educated society, there's actually some of them who believe that higher education should only be for the elite and for those who could afford it. And as a result, you know, we had to hire a Frenchman to actually help us build the Erie Canal and, you know, well, to help us build the Erie Canal. So essentially, if you want our country to progress, we need higher education.
Thank you, Jose Enriquez from the NMPIRG student chapter at UNM. We also heard earlier in the hour from Brian Malone, director of student financial aid at the University of New Mexico. If you'd like to send a comment about the show or suggest a topic for a future show, you can email us at callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post your comments online, or you can give us a call in the newsroom, 277-8016. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us for the KUNM Call-In Show. Engineering this morning by Roman Garcia. Andy Lyman is our news intern, and your phone screening was done this morning by Michael Hess. We'll talk to you next week, Thursday morning at 8 on the KUNM Call-In Show here on KUNM.